This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Play the ball on the show.
How about a couple of texts that came in regarding my opinion and characterization of San Francisco 49er fans to the 206 saying, what you described about San Francisco fans is exactly what Seattle transplants experience with University of Washington fans, to which I say that is not funny at all, because it's kind of true.
Oh, it's very true. I mean,
you haven't been here long enough to say it's very true. It's kind of true. Enough of a concession. That's all you're going to get out of me.
As a fan of our beloved Cougs, I mean, this is something I've noticed, and you're calling Oregon the Nouveau Riche. Which is fair, because they haven't actually won a title, but what have they won? Like, every game that they played against you guys for a while? So, essentially, you guys are sort of...
They've only won 14 of the past 16.
Oh,
so
okay.
Let's get
only
things
that.
Sorted out.
Gotcha.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Well,
yeah,
let's not
be prone to overstatement. That's
almost
that's
happened
right.
This time. I was there.
We're 500 over the last four meetings with the Oregon Ducks. The Seattle Seahawks looking and asking the question of how do you get over the hump? And for all of the hand-wringing we've done, I think it's worth clarifying that I don't think anybody believes that this team needs to rebuild to get back. Like, that's something that should be stated out, because there are times you get to a team. The Oklahoma City Thunder kind of got to that point last year after the playoffs where they're like, this is as deep as this group's going to go. Like, Russell Westbrook and Paul George are good enough to get you into the playoffs and you could be competitive in the first round, but that's really about it. So you're better off blowing it up. Nobody thinks that nobody should think that Seattle needs to take steps back to get the assets to take a step forward. The question is, how best, what's the most likely process? How can you get over this kind of roadblock that you've gotten into, which is you're good enough to make the playoffs. You're good enough to win a playoff game, even on the road. You're just not really, in the past three times they've been to the divisional playoffs, it's followed the same script. They fall in a big hole. They're on the road. They play like hell to get back and then come up just short and say, hey, we'll get them next year. Well, we need to find a way to get them over the hump. And this weekend, it strikes me that they can look at two teams, and the Chiefs are here because of their offense. I believe, for as much as people have talked about the 49ers being able to run the ball effectively, I think the 49ers are here because of their defense. What is the most likely path that gets Seattle to the Super Bowl next season?
Well, they're closer to having an offense like Kansas City than they're closer to having a defense like San Francisco. But the problem is, it's how the Seahawks view themselves, Danny, and I think that the Seahawks view their offense a lot like the 49ers view their offense, which is, hey, like, if we don't need to pass the football, we're not going to. Now, maybe not to the degree that they're going to have Russell Wilson throw eight passes in a game like we saw from Jimmy Garoppolo in the NFC Championship game. But that's, I think, the interesting dynamic of all of this is that, yeah, there are two blueprints, the 49ers defense or the Chiefs offense. And I think Seattle likes those 49ers offense of all the things that are involved in this game.
It's an interesting contrast. And it does make sort of a question or ask if is that the right approach? Is trying to improve the thing that's weakest, is that the best route to get there because that's the way you want to play? For years, people have talked about the philosophy and what you build from, and it's got to, well, you know what? They've got a quarterback in his prime, and the best thing for them to do is find out what's the way that we can maximize that the most. I am intrigued by the example of the New England Patriots, because after about 7 or 8 years, at about this same point that Russell Wilson is at in his career with Tom Brady, I think things changed for how the Patriots functioned, and they became a much higher scoring team. Not that they ever didn't score high before. They ranked in the top 10 in scoring. In the midst of the time where they won back-to-back Super Bowls, they were a good offense. It was just different, and some of it coincided with the arrival of Randy Moss, but that really became a team that was among the highest scoring teams and started playing at a significantly faster tempo.
But what's interesting is that they never won with those teams with the up-tempo that had no real defensive support. The teams that won against the Seahawks had Darrelle Revis and a defense that had really changed. Against the Atlanta Falcons, the defense wasn't quite the level that it was the season that they beat Seattle, but it was definitely better. And then when they beat the Rams, the defense was the reason they won that game entirely, and a complimentary running game. I think when you look at that, what New England's been able to do over all of this time is they've done a really good job of having complementary football. And I think you have to find a way to somehow instead of necessarily fixing the entire defense in one offseason, which is just not possible, I think with where Seattle was this past season, given what we saw, you're going to have to bring in some young guys, and it's going to take them some time to get up to speed. Maybe you get lucky, and all the guys that you bring in can be immediate contributors, and maybe some of the guys that you took in last year can be more contributors than they were last year. But you need to have something that's going to minimize the impact of your defense. And I think one way is to have a much more explosive offense that is never going to be facing situations where they're punting. That's really difficult to do. What Kansas City has built is incredible. It really is. And you got to give credit to Andy Reid. You also have to give credit to all the players that are there, which there are many of. But when you look at the defense, is there a way that they can make their defense like Kansas City's from this standpoint? Kansas City's defense is very complimentary of its offense because you brought in a guy in Frank Clark who can get after the passer. You have a guy already in Chris Jones who is very good at generating pressure up the middle. And while I don't think Tyrann Mathieu had a very good season last year with the Houston Texans as someone who watched every single game that he played in, it might have been because he just was in a place that wasn't allowing him to be his natural self, his aggressive, free, I'm going to go all over the place kind of self. That has changed this year. And when you have a pass rush that is aggressive and you have a defensive player in the middle of the field who is aggressive, well, when you're with a team that has this Chiefs offense, you're going to be forcing offenses to have to just basically wing it and throw it and put themselves in situations that actually make your defense not exposed by maybe an inability to stop the run. So how can they find a way to make themselves more complementary? Is it improving the pass rush? Is it improving the secondary? That's, I think, the biggest approach for the defense this offseason.
Let's look at what Kansas City did. They changed coordinators, right?
They fired coaching staff, right.
Steve Spagnuolo came in and was the defensive coordinator. Now it's a little bit different because Andy Reid's the head coach. He's airs on the offensive side of the ball. So he didn't have as much of his fingerprints all over what they are doing on defense as Pete Carroll, Seattle's head coach, has on what they're doing. But they changed their entire coaching staff. They released Justin Houston, who had been their most accomplished pass rusher. They traded Dee Ford, who was their best pass rusher last season. They traded for Frank Clark. So they essentially overhauled the guys that were going after the passer. They ditched their top two options and brought in a new alpha. They still have Chris Jones, who is a really good player. And he was hurt for the first game of the playoffs, and he only played situationally in the AFC Championship game. I think he's the best player on their defense. I think Chris Jones is the most impactful player.
Yeah, definitely.
And then they sign Tyrann Mathieu, who has been a great fit. I don't disagree with your characterization of how he fit in Houston. And it was a one-year deal, and it certainly looked like he miscalculated his value because he chose not to renegotiate his deal with Arizona, was released, and then ended up signing in Houston for less than the Cardinals had offered him under the redone deal. He made up for it a little bit in free agency. Is Seattle, when we talk about what they should do next year, is it a matter of, because if you're going to follow the blueprint that the Chiefs drew up, you would be willing to change everything, including your top pass rusher, including letting Jadeveon Clowney walk in free agency and finding a different solution to that. I don't think that's the best thing, but I think that the drastic changes that they made to the defense points to the fact that sort of it can't get worse, and throwing out everything and not necessarily starting from scratch, but getting rid of some of the expensive parts, that might give you a chance to improve, because Kansas City's defense is better this year.
It has. I have a hard time buying into it, but like by the numbers, it has been. And I do wonder how it'll fare against an offense that's actually balanced in the Super Bowl, as opposed to going up against some of the ham sandwich quarterbacks that they've been going up against down the stretch, which includes a sort of washed-up Tom Brady. You have two games against Phillip Rivers, Mitchell Trubisky. You saw Ryan Tannehill in the playoffs. Like the stretch of quarterbacks that the Chiefs have gone up against has been a bit of a cupcake buffet. But what you were talking about just a second ago, and just all the moves, all the changes that Kansas City made, and really starting from scratch, it wasn't just being aggressive and trading a whole lot to get in someone like Frank Clark, which honestly you shouldn't do with Jadeveon Clowney. You saw the resources it took that you got from Frank Clark. You don't want to give up those resources again to try to repeat that and bring somebody else in. But I mean, they also released Eric Berry. This was a guy who was a leader of their defense for a really long time, a guy who had beaten cancer, a guy who I'm sure was just a real positive locker room influence. And when you make that change from just the old guard of what your unit used to be, sometimes there are some leadership positions that ended up being casualties along the way. So I wonder if that's also something that they look at. I wonder if the Seahawks look at their salary cap and think to themselves, okay, there's a couple of expensive players here. And you maybe look at the linebacker position where you can get out of K.J. Wright's contract, even if he did have a better season than we think because of all the issues that that 4-3 defense had in coverage. Is that somebody that gives you a little bit more flexibility, space to bring in somebody else? Sometimes it's what you need to do is just to press the reset button entirely. The thing is, there are some young players on this team that I feel like could step up. It's just a matter of somehow you got to find a way to get them up to speed more quickly. And my suggestion has been something similar to what Kansas City did. Not necessarily can everybody on the defensive coaching staff, but let's get some fresh minds in on a unit that has not changed its staff in 2 years.
I think that the more drastic changes should come on defense as opposed to on offense. I think that's where you have the most possibility of if you turn things over, the likelihood that it gets worse, maybe it does, but the chances that you get better when your best players are among your oldest players, that tends to be a pretty difficult recipe. Now the hope is that you get this group of younger players that start maturing together, and I think there are some positive signs. Shaquille Griffin having this season, that was a positive sign. And while Trey Flowers is worrisome, I think you look at the progress Shaquille Griffin said, and let's not shut that door. Let's not assume he's going to make that jump. Let's not say that's all buttoned up. The idea of a veteran nickel corner, I think, is an interesting one. I think nickel corner was certainly a question mark, and I remain puzzled why you didn't see Ugo Amadi in there earlier. And you're going to need to find ways to generate pass rush. And you haven't seen anything from LJ Collier that makes you think that's going to be part of the answer. So I see it that they've got some pretty defensive end is your high budget line item, right?
Right.
Like that's as expensive outside of quarterback. You go quarterback, receiver, defensive end probably even is higher than wide receiver
or pass rushing
defensive lineman. Like you're going to need to re-sign a guy who's going to be at the top of the market, and you're going to need to add. That's going to take so much of your different resources. We do have my favorite suggestion for improvements and what'll make the difference next season. This used to be when you have a bad team, people start asking about the backup quarterback. Now it's John Ursua. The number of questions that I have fielded and seen on the text line about John Ursua is absolutely baffling to me. And it's not that I think he's a bad player or that he won't contribute, but the idea that a slot receiver who is older than your average rookie, who was selected in the seventh round and somehow wasn't given the opportunity to distinguish himself on the field. It's like the new backup quarterback is like, hey, that's the guy on offense whose name I know, and it can't be any worse. So let's get him out there.
But remember,
I don't think that getting John Ursua more opportunities next season is going to be enough to get them over the hump to the Super Bowl. So, I don't, as good as he might be, and I hope he's great, I don't think more reps for John Ursua is going to be the difference.
You're so dismissive of the John Ursua. Say his name correctly. I mean, remember the one time he had that catch? I mean,
he did. He did a great job catching it. He didn't quite get in.
What if he didn't
quite get in? But it was fine. It's the same thing as what it used to be when people. Mike Teal was the last player that I felt like I answered this many questions about. Mike Teal was a quarterback. I think he was drafted in the sixth
former
round.
Former Rutgers quarterback, right?
That's correct. And the Seahawks drafted him in the sixth round, and they had Matt Hasselbeck, and they had Seneca Wallace. And each week, as the season went further and further down the drain, people were like, why don't we roll Mike Teal out there? I was like, yeah, that's an absolutely great idea. Like, we haven't seen him yet. Like, because we haven't seen him, we entertain the possibility. At least there's the small flicker of hope that he might be better. I was like, oh, why haven't we seen him yet? I don't know, maybe because the coaches have seen him in practice every day this week. And because he's probably not ready and they don't think he's better than the guy who's your franchise's career leading passer. But that's just a guess from me. Just a wild stab in the dark. And now apparently it's John Ursua who's the missing link to Seattle's Super Bowl ambitions because the coaches are so blind to the talent that he shows every day that a seventh round wide receiver, just as soon as he gets out there, is going to knock everybody down.
Really just, I'm blown away by how much you just can't stand John Ursua. I mean, Danny basically just said, release John Ursua and put him in the
fantasy. No, I like him. I'm tired of hearing that as being
so
like, we're talking about all these things of like, do you re-sign Jadeveon Clowney? That's an important question. How are you going to find pass rush? That's a difficult choice. Do you want to release KJ Wright? I don't really want to, but I wonder about it. But okay, instead we're going to get, and now the 509 thinks Ursua should play corner instead of Trey Flowers. So maybe that's it. Oh,
yeah,
now the 509.
That's the solution.
The 509 says, so we need more stars, like Russ said.
Yeah.
Yes, that's exactly right, but he shouldn't have been saying it. It's Danny and Gallon. It's time for us to go around the NFL.
It's time to go around the NFL. brought to you by Toyota of Puyallup. The bottom line on the biggest stories in the NFL every morning at 9:15 with Danny and Gallant.
There ain't an exceptional death.
Jess,
what's going on?
That was probably an unnecessary and unexpected.
It was very unnecessary.
Yes. That's okay. I like it when your guys' faces turn red.
Thank you for taking John Ursua out of the equation, man. Good job.
I don't know why. I'm tired of hearing that. Fine.
Who have you heard it from?
Like, I would say that after every game, there's somebody that would mention it either on Twitter or in comments, or somehow to me it would be brought to my attention that when are we going to see John Ursua? And I was like, I don't know, and I'm not losing sleep over that.
Your Ursua tirade is over.
Okay.
Let's hear from our Lord and Savior Gardner Minshew.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah.
Beloved Cougs.
He was on with Dan Patrick yesterday, and he actually had a couple of really good quotes, but I'm going to play this one for you, and it's about not getting to go to New York for the Heisman.
Did you get to go to New York?
No, dude. That was ridiculous. I've never been to New York. It would have been way more fun if they had just let me go, you know, so that was pretty disappointing.
Because you had Kyler and then Tua, Dwayne Haskins.
Yeah.
And Will Greer.
Yeah, so.
I think they were worried about you in New York.
Yeah, it would have been a real shame if I show up and steal the show, you know, and finish fifth, so I guess they made the right call.
I mean, he should have been there.
No, dude.
Should have been there.
No, dude.
Nah, man. He was also asked. Yeah, Dan asked him if he had gone on a TV show when he was doing his road trip too.
Did you do a TV show?
No, I posted like 4 times on Instagram, and that was like plenty for me.
That was pretty good.
I mean, he would have worn a Canadian tuxedo, and he would have stolen the show. He really would have. And especially with all these like crazy fashions you're seeing from players these days, I would have loved to have seen that. And honestly, constant world against our Cougs, our beloved Cougs, just trying to keep us down. Not cool.
We're going to talk to Ryan Gustafson, who's the president of Seattle's XFL team, to make an announcement next. I do think of that when I think of a quarterback like Gardner Minshew, because think about how close he came to not getting a shot. I mean, he wasn't starting at East Carolina and was considering transferring to a place where he wasn't going to play at Alabama. And next year, he's going to be competing for a starting NFL job. Like, he's got a chance to have one of those 32 jobs. And I don't think anybody that's watched him thinks, like, oh, that's an untenable long shot. I think he's got a chance. How many other guys, because of a lack of opportunities or because things didn't click, how many Gardner Minshews are out there that things break differently? They're in position to do that.
I mean, look, with Minshew, too, I mean, you get the broken collarbone that Nick Foles suffers. You thought you were going to see Nick Foles all season long, and that actually might make the Jaguars a better team than they were a couple of seasons before with Blake Bortles getting them all the way to the AFC Championship game. I forget this guy's name, but the guy who could have been quarterback of those Pittsburgh Steelers teams back in the 1970s instead of Terry Bradshaw. Yes, Joe Gilliam. I mean, that's a guy right there that could have theoretically been in a different situation. Quarterback is all about circumstance. I mean, that's how Tom Brady got his first start, too.
Well, the smack talk has started down in Miami, and we'll hear from Tyreek Hill.
Hey, Richard Sherman, I'm going to talk a lot of smack to you right now, okay? So check this out. Get y'all cameras out, all right? Richard Sherman, I respect your game, man. Thank you for locking down all of the receivers you have faced. You are truly a GOAT, man, and I really hope that we can jersey swap after the game. Much respect to you. Stay healthy, stay humble, and keep grinding, baby. I can't wait for the matchup.
That was terrible trash talk.
And I think that's intentional, but how would Richard Sherman somehow spin that into trash talk, into motivational fuel? I think the last part, I'm looking forward to the matchup. Oh, you're looking forward to the matchup? Oh, little tiny fast man?
That's why it was perfect smack talk for Richard, because he can't fuel himself with it.
A couple of the really good ones that he's had. Richard referred to Pierre Garçon, I believe, talking about him as a player that doesn't matter, was a good one. He also called Steve Smith little after a game in Carolina, though they've since been cool. Like, they're fine. But, like, when he said that, I was like, oh, I don't know if that's the tree you want to bark up.
Yeah,
Richard, what were you doing?
Well, in true classy form, Falcons owner Arthur Blank is rooting for Mike Shanahan in the Super Bowl. Obviously, we all know what happened against the Patriots in Super Bowl 50.
Wants to see Kyle get a little bit of redemption. Poor Arthur Blank. Like, he's the guy Is he ever going to get close to a Super Bowl again?
Like, no.
He was at a 25-point lead.
The only way they would have is if they made Kyle Shanahan the head coach over Dan Quinn, I think, because they would have kept Kyle Shanahan aboard. I know you guys
I'm not going to stand for the Dan Quinn heresy.
I mean, I know you guys like Dan Quinn, but I mean, they were an awful team this past season until the end of the year.
They turned it around.
Yeah, they turned it around. They're still 7-9. They're still 7-9.
I think that was a positive sign.
7-9 is not an awful team. 1-7 is an awful start. 7-9 ending is not an awful team.
They beat the Niners at home.
Yeah, okay. Cool. That's awesome. I mean, if they had done any wins in the earlier part of the year, then guess what? We're having a different conversation maybe about this. Here's the other thing about Dan Quinn. Dan Quinn does not get enough criticism, I think, for calling Kyle Shanahan off, because he's the head coach and he can tell the offensive coordinator, all right, it's time to just settle down, kick the field goal, and end the game, which they could have.
How about the guys just continue to execute and not fail to block players and give up uncontested?
Yeah, there were people on the field that had something to do with that game.
Okay.
What if John Ursula? What if John Ursua is an undiscovered Gardner Minshew?
That's a great point. That's a first-round pick you can trade him for.
Emergency that was, quarterback?
No, that was a solid counterpoint from the 360.
Marshall Faulk calls Christian McCaffrey a better version of himself.
Ooh, that's interesting. McCaffrey's an awesome player. He's really fun to watch.
I am a big fan of Christian McCaffrey. And honestly, I spaced out for a second. This happened again. I apologize. I'm sorry, Jess.
Do you know who we're talking about?
My
Have
bad.
You heard of a little guy named Marshall?
No.
Sorry.
I had to move it along. Somebody that Bill Belichick said needs to be hit every single time.
Oh, Marshall Faulk.
Okay, gotcha.
He knew the trivia anyway.
Yeah.
Let John Ursua cook. It's now coming in as a hat.
Yeah, see, that's a real thing. that's what I'm distracted by right now, the Ursua text.
I don't know how to view Marshall Faulk's career. Is he one of the greats? He's in the Hall of Fame. Is he one of the guys that should be in the Hall of Fame? He had a strange career in which he switched teams, became a better player. He was incredibly important to the greatest show on turf, but he wasn't the best player on that offense. That's Kurt Warner.
I think he was better than Kurt Warner.
Oh,
honestly,
really?
I do. I think he was significantly better. I think he's one of the best all around. In his heyday, he was one of the best all around running backs that the NFL's ever seen. I think.
Is he better than Curtis Martin?
Yes. I like him. In his heyday, I think Marshall Faulk was a better player than Curtis Martin. And that's nothing against Curtis Martin. I think Curtis Martin was the definition of consistency. But Marshall Faulk, as a receiver, as a running back, one of the best to ever play the game. And, I mean, you saw it in that game plan, in that Super Bowl 36. If the Rams had not gone away from Mike Martz if Mike Martz, offensive coordinator, then turned head coach of those greatest show on turf Rams, did not go away from Marshall Faulk as much as they did, who knows what happens in that game. But they did not, I think, get him as involved as they needed to in that game.
It's Danny and Gallant, and we're going to introduce our new partner here at 710 ESPN Seattle, something that's really exciting. It's going to be coming up next month, and we've got the announcement next.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios
on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
It is Danny and Gallant. And we got a new member of the family here at 710 ESPN Seattle. And we're really excited because we're now less than 2 weeks away from the start of the season of the XFL Seattle Dragons. And we join now by Ryan Gustafson, the president of the Dragons, because they are our newest partners here. And I just want to say we're really excited about this opportunity, Ryan, and excited to be part of your first season here in the XFL.
Likewise, guys. We're super excited about being part of your family and, you know, telling the story of the Dragons. Through our partnership with ESPN. So thank you so much. We're honored to be in this partnership and excited about what it's going to be.
You guys are off to a great start, too. Number one in ticket sales?
Yeah, there was an article that came out last week. You know, Seattle has the best fans in the world, so none of this surprises us, but it's also about building for the long term. So we're excited about where we are today and going to continue to build it and, you know, just couldn't be more thrilled about the crowd that will be there come a couple weeks from now.
We are talking to Ryan Gustafson. Just to let you know a little bit of the programming that's going to go along with the partnership. Jim Zorn, former Seahawks quarterback, who is now, I guess, has a role in his second expansion franchise. He was part of the Spirit of 76 when the Seahawks launched, was, as Jim Morris said, the ideal quarterback for an expansion team because of his ability to run around. He is the Dragons coach, and he's going to take part in a coaches show that will air every Monday. That'll be during the John Clayton show. On Wednesday nights, we're going to have a one-hour Dragons Insider, which will be hosted by our very own Lydia Cruz, which should be extremely exciting. Ryan, you mentioned the schedule. February 8th, you'll open. That game's on the road at Washington, D.C., televised on ABC. And the next week, in February 15th, you'll be at home at CenturyLink Field. What are the fans who are coming out? What can they expect to see when your team takes the field?
That's a great question. I mean, I think Coach is super excited about the talent that we have on our roster. You know, names that our fans are already recognized, Kaysen Williams, Keenan Reynolds, BJ Daniels. We have a really talented roster. I think people are going to see authentic football with a bit of a little twist on it to speed up the game, make it more engaging. And I think we're going to have a product on the field that people are going to be, you know, really honored to be a part of. From a fan standpoint, I think you're going to see us be accessible. People are going to have, you know, new experiences as part of our game that they've never seen before. And we want to bring our fans closer to the game than they've ever been before. Everything we do is for the love of football, and we want our fans to be part of everything that we do.
What's been like watching the competition as all these guys try to vie for starting positions, playing time? Because for all of these guys, it's essentially playing with a blank slate right now. They're all trying to start something new in this new league with this new team.
Yeah, you know, the XFL is so great because it's about opportunity, giving players a chance to play the game that they love. Everybody that is on our team and across our league is doing this for the right reasons. They want to play the game that they love, and the passion, enthusiasm for that opportunity is something that we're all super excited about. That's why Coach Zorn and his staff are doing this too. It's all about the players and about creating a compelling football product for our fans, and you know, we're just excited to get it kicked off here quickly.
The other person at our station who is going to have a role covering our new partner, the XFL Seattle Dragons, is Maura Dooley, who's going to be reporting as an insider. She'll also have sideline reports and be part of a weekly podcast that will also be hosted by Lydia Cruz. Ryan, I find myself thinking back to the 1980s, and that's kind of when I was just turning 10 and kind of becoming a football fan and knowing more about the teams, and the USFL launched. And I remember how cool that was to have a separate league that was in the fall. I think from their business development, there's a lot of lessons to be learned. But it was a standalone league that tried to put on a competitive product. I know you guys have talked about not competing with the NFL. How do you see the XFL fitting into the larger landscape of tackle football in America?
Everyone wants more football. We did a lot of market research across the country, and there are upwards of 40 million football fans that want more football in the springtime. We think that there's going to be a huge audience that watches us on ABC, ESPN, and Fox, and we're excited about continuing to grow this for the long term. We're not in this for 1 year. We're in this to build a 100-year brand, and it's about doing things the right way to engage fans and, you know, make them a part of our game. So there's plenty of room for more football. People tell us that, and we're excited about the product on the field that we're going to be bringing to our fans here in the next couple weeks.
Was there anything that you guys learned from the Alliance of American Football and how they started and how things didn't go so well for them as you guys got ready for it? Because you guys had you've had a lot more time and a lot more resources invested into it. So what was there anything that you were able to take away from what they went through?
Sure. I mean, I think that you showed that people have an appetite for more football. So it proved that concept. But like you mentioned, it's just a completely different animal. We have over $500 million of committed funding to getting this stood up, which allows us to think long term about fan development. It also allowed us an 18-month process to develop a football product that's going to be compelling for our fans to watch. You saw that with our rule innovations. You see that with what we did at training camp the last couple weeks. We had a lot more time to develop a really great product that our fans are going to be excited to watch on television and in person. So all of that, plus the people that are involved in this, it's just going to differentiate us from anything that's ever been done before and help us succeed.
You mentioned some of the figures. We're going to know the coach, Jim Zorn, who's not only former player but has been a coach here with the Seattle Seahawks and was former head coach at Washington in the NFL. Kaysen Williams, Keenan Reynolds, both of whom have had time with the Seattle Seahawks. BJ Daniels, who was the backup for a year. What style of offense do you think we're going to see? Have you seen enough for your team to know what it's going to look like when you guys get out on the field?
Yeah, I think, you know, Coach Zorn in his heyday as a player was known for his innovative style of play, and you're going to see that with us too. Across our league, you're going to see more fast-paced, up-tempo offenses. We have the 25-second play clock, the running clock, technology where coaches can speak directly to players to help move things in a quicker way. So I think you're going to see that across the league, fast-paced, up-tempo. And I know Coach has a lot of innovations he's going to bring. But, you know, we've got a lot of talent on our team. And I know our fans are going to be excited about, you know, the product that we put on there on both sides of the ball. And it just I'm so excited to get it kicked off here in a couple weeks, both when we all go to D.C., but obviously when we kick off here at CenturyLink Field on February 15th.
I'm really intrigued by the idea of everyone having headsets. So is it multiple players now as opposed to in the NFL where there's two guys with a green dot?
Yeah, exactly. So Coach can speak to all the players and,
wow.
You know, kind of just, again, it speeds it all up. So there's no, like, restrictions on the amount of time and everything else. So the idea is we want less downtime, more action, less stall, more ball. So we're going to bring technology and rule innovations that are going to help do that. And we think that speeding up the game along with some of our other rule innovations that eliminate plays that may be less entertaining, that's all going to help our fans enjoy our style of play.
The other thing that I thought was so interesting is quarterbacks. We just talked about Gardner Minshew, who is going to be competing for a spot with the Jacksonville Jaguars. But in a different way, if he doesn't end up transferring to Washington State, that was a guy that was kind of at the brink of football in some ways. He was maybe going to transfer for a graduate assistant position at Alabama. An alternative league provides opportunities for development to quarterbacks that they don't necessarily get in today's environment. John Kitna was found in the World Football League. Kurt Warner had time in the Arena Football League. I'm really excited to see, and I know you guys put a huge emphasis on finding quarterbacks, because I think that that's a huge opportunity to make future stars, not just in the XFL, but maybe guys that we will see in the NFL at some point.
Yeah, you guys mentioned Kurt Warner in the last segment. I thought that's a really great example of someone who was playing in an alternative football league who got his chance and really now has become a Hall of Famer. Quarterback play is incredibly important to the quality of our play across any football league, and we've done a lot of time and investment into making sure that we have the best quarterbacks out there. There's no shortage of talent, football talent out there. And, you know, the guys that we have on our roster and across our league, there's some well-known names and there's some less known names that will become well-known just because they're going to be playing on national television in front of big crowds. And that's exciting for our players. It's exciting for our fans and really kind of, you know, what our league is all about, creating that opportunity.
Is part of that long-term process you guys looking at some players that maybe aren't getting the most opportunity that they could potentially in college, and maybe you guys look at and say, hey, in the NFL, it takes 3 years. You have to be with a program for 3 years before you can go to the draft. Is that something that you guys are looking to maybe say, hey, you can come quicker if you feel that you can play in this professional league?
Yeah, I mean, we aren't subject to the same rules as the NFL with 3 years between high school and being drafted. It's not a central part of our player acquisition strategy. But as we get this built out, it's certainly something that you could see happen. And, you know, I think our main goal is to make sure we have the most talented players out there to create a really entertaining product for people to watch on television, for people to come to the games. And, you know, give players opportunities that they otherwise wouldn't have. So that's certainly something that could happen down the road a little bit more. And, you know, our goal is just to make sure that we have the best talent out there we can.
He is Ryan Gustafson, the president of the XFL Seattle Dragons, who are our newest partners here at 710 ESPN Seattle. Again, you'll be hearing the Jim Zorn show. That'll be on Mondays during the John Clayton show during the XFL season, which starts February 8th. You'll also have a Wednesday evening program, which will be the Dragons Insider, hosted by our very own Lydia Cruz, as well as a weekly podcast. And Maura Dooley will be serving as our Dragons Insider and also sideline reporter. Ryan, we're really excited about this partnership, and we really appreciate you coming in this morning to join us.
Likewise. We're so grateful and excited about our partnership as well. This is the beginning of something really special for us and our partnership, and excited to have you all involved in our family and likewise to be involved in yours. So thank you so much for having me.
In the words of Earl Thomas, it's dragon time.
You got it. Kicking off soon. Thanks, guys.
Thanks very much, Ryan. It is Danny and Gallant. We're going to be back to raise flags, including really corny quotes that stupid radio hosts make to try and end interview segments. That'll be next.
From the pocket and flags everywhere.
Flag on the play.
Now there's a flag down.
Every morning at 9:45 with Danny and Gallant. Brought to you by Carter Volkswagen.
If the noise persists, the defense will be charged with a timeout.
Flag on the play.
Is it a contradiction if I like the Dragons as a nickname, yet am somewhat resistant to Krakens?
Yes. 100%.
You're very fictional character-ist.
Yeah, it's true. Like, that's my... I have two objections to Kraken. First of all, it's the weird singular plural thing. It, grammatically, it's confusing and it's difficult, and I don't think it's
necessary. You can't figure that out. You cannot figure that out.
So easy. Really.
It's not easy.
It's the
not
reporter
easy.
In him. I totally understand. There's an AP style, and then it's just different.
But what if we just tell you it's singular right away? Shouldn't you?
No. Because does it sound right to say the Kraken is playing on its home ice?
Yes.
No, it doesn't.
Stop thinking about it.
There's more than one Kraken.
Stop thinking about it.
Like there's just one of them. There's a whole bunch of Krakens running around, but they're only called Kraken.
Just stop thinking about it. And I'm sure your other reservation is like, well, actually, a Kraken is a North American monster from the North Atlantic Sea. It's not from the Pacific Coast. And,
well, it's definitely that it
like
doesn't
that.
Have anything to do with the Pacific Coast, whereas salmon is, I don't know, one of our main industries, one of the things we're known
yeah,
for.
Yeah, guess what happens to salmon? They get killed by everything. Literally yeah. everything.
And by me, because they're delicious.
Yes, you don't want to be delicious. I do not want my hockey team to be a delicious appetizer that can be put on bagels in the morning with cream cheese on lox.
That's smoked salmon. That's yeah. only if they get beat.
Yeah. Well, how often are they going to get smoked? They're going to be an expansion team.
Only when they play in New York. That'll be on the back page of the Post.
That's right.
100%.
Smoked shock eye.
All right. Let's raise flags, throw flags, pick up flags, do the things we do this time. Jessamine, we'll start with you.
I'm raising two flags, and they are orange, green. I still say orange. Yes, I do. They're orange, green, blue, and white, and they're both for Lydia and Maura, who are
yeah.
going to be expanding our coverage in our new partnership with the XFL. Maura on the sidelines for the team, and Lydia as a host of podcasts, Maura as an insider, and there's going to be a lot of content coming from both of them. So stay tuned. I'm really excited about this partnership, too, so we'll raise a third one for the actual Dragons because they deserve one, too. And the season kicks off in just over a week. So a lot of good stuff coming from this side of the station.
I'm excited.
That's great.
Home opener, what, the 15th? Very excited 15th. For that, too. Yes.
Sorry,
Tampa Bay
weeks.
Vipers, I believe. No, and the season starts on the 8th. Got a game against DC. Hated DC. Can't remember their nickname.
The Defenders?
Oh, is it the Defenders?
The
DC Defenders.
Yeah.
Now, the one thing that I've always thought, and this was, if there was going to be a singular nickname for the hockey team, I kind of liked Republic. For a number of different reasons. First of all, you could have enemies of the Republic. Like, that would be your opponents. These men would be declared enemies of the Republic. You could also have a fan club that would be the Young Republicans.
No.
Oh, here we go.
No.
Lydia.
Seattle Republic sounds like a variant of Banana Republic. We cannot have that as hockey. Come on now.
Wait a minute. Isn't there a section? Isn't that Fremont?
Republican?
Isn't Fremont actually an
yeah,
independent republic?
Maybe.
Wow.
I don't know. They have a weird Lenin.
Independent
statue.
Artists Republic?
Didn't know yeah. that.
Also Georgetown. Lydia, flags.
Jess is so nice. I was probably going to do something along those lines, but hers is way cooler. So just a flag for Jess for being so kind.
Flag on me for stealing your flag.
No, raising a flag, not throwing a flag. Let's be clear. I only throw flags on myself most of the time. Let's see. Let's raise a flag for the leak of the name happening yesterday, just so that we could talk about it and gave us some fanfare, because we've been waiting patiently on this announcement. And whether it's the Kraken or not, I enjoyed the complete meltdown by some people on Twitter and then the complete joy of some people on Twitter, including Kevin Smith, who just decided to say that he would become Seattle's number one fan if, in fact, they were the Kraken.
Danny and I had a very heated pre-show conversation about this nickname situation.
Yeah.
We are so in opposite on this. I'm so Team Kraken. I did wear my Seattle Mets sweater today. But I don't think they're going to be the Mets.
There's only one Mets.
Okay. Well, I mean, but they're not good, so. Like,
but they are the Metropolitans easy. And the Mets, so that's why we can't beat them here in Seattle. There's already a Metropolitans and a Mets.
Isn't there a division, too?
Yeah,
probably
it's a division of the NHL. It would
be very, very confusing.
It would be pretty awesome, though. I mean, they're in two divisions. I don't know. I'm moving on.
The best opposition I've heard to the Sockeye name comes from my friend Chris Alpin, who's one of my favorite people on Twitter. And he just declared quite sternly, no freaking fish names, which I was actually,
whoa.
I can kind of get behind that.
Yeah,
Kraken.
Yeah, I'm with that.
Kraken, right. Not a fish.
I don't want that fish thrown on the court. I don't, or on the ice. I don't want like octopus thrown on the ice. Like that's a tradition some places, but then I don't want it copied. We need our own traditions.
Should always be teddy bears. It should always be teddy bears.
But yeah, but then
teddy bears thrown on the ice.
We'll only be throwing hats on the ice because we'll be scoring so many hat tricks. That's it.
Yes.
All right, my flag is going to be raised for Paul Gallant. You would think that I might throw a flag because he wasn't listening, didn't realize we were talking about Marshall Faulk's compliment of Christian McCaffrey. Here's why I'm raising the flag. Because the moment when I'm looking into Paul's eyes and it dawns on me that he doesn't know what we're talking about, because previously I will have thought, did I put him in a bad spot? Did I say something that's kind of weird? Is he stumped here? And what I'm actually watching is the decision-making that Paul has. Am I going to try to play this off, or am I going to cop to what's happening? And that moment of indecision where you see the little mischievous junior high imp in him where he's like, should I fess up, or should I just skate out of here? And then the better part of himself, like the better part, he's like, nope, I've got to be honest. And I like to think that it dates back to both Kitsy, her demand for honesty, as well as his father, who required him to apologize in a high-pitched English accent. Like, Paul is nothing if not accountable, and his willingness to snitch on himself is fantastic.
I appreciate that. It usually lessens the punishment if you end up doing that.
I'm sorry, I just wasn't listening.
It's honestly probably a good thing, too, because typically whenever I hear Marshall Faulk, I get triggered because I get annoyed with how he's so upset about having lost that Super Bowl to the Patriots. Dude, like, Kurt Warner threw the worst pick six that I've ever seen to Ty Law. That's why they lost that game. It's not because of some taping that you thought allegedly happened. All right, I got to throw a flag, don't I? I mean, I was going to throw a flag at myself. I'm just going to throw a flag at the idea that a team playing hockey is going to be nicknamed after a fish that is predated on by osprey and bears and humans and bigger fish and porpoises and dolphins and orcas. I mean, I can just keep on going on and on and on and on. Salmon, yes, they're from the greater Pacific Northwest area. Guess what? They are so weak, they have to swim to the same spot over and over again just so that they can procreate. It is an arduous
That's
process
weak.
And it's pointless. Yes, do it
it's
anywhere
one of
else.
Miracles.
Well, like, guess what?
It's weak that they swim upstream and know how to go back to where they were born to spawn.
Guess what?
Are you crazy?
I think that's dedication.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Devotion.
It's
turning
crazy.
On the nighttime into the day.
Stop going upstream, because guess what? You're going to go by the Ballard Locks and you're going to go by those fat seals who just sit there basically like vultures and eat all the salmon that go by. Yeah, big problem.
Supporting the infrastructure. He's Paul Gallant, and he uses the term predated, which is a word, but it means to predate something.
Predated.
Instead of preyed upon. Yeah, you don't predate on something.
Listen, we create
you
new words.
Something.
We create new words, and we don't care about grammar, Danny, who is so upset with the idea of a team that does not have an S at the end of their name. It's Danny and Gallant. So long, farewell. We'll see you tomorrow.
It was just so much fun.